Washington Bullets. At forward, number 43, 6'11 from Iona, Jeff Rulin. At center, number 44, 6'10 from Hampton Institute, Rick Mahorn.
Hey, it's Adam here. The audio is delivered here in podcast form, but you can watch our conversations online. Full episodes will live on the Beef Brothers channel. Yes, that's right. Rick and Jeff are on YouTube. Relevant links are in the show notes of your listening app and also appear beneath the video. A quick warning that occasional language during this series is not safe for young ears. Now, let's meet, M-E-A-T, the Beef Brothers. Welcome to episode 3 of Beef Brothers. This video will be on YouTube and in podcast format on your listening app of choice. Let's say g'day to the iconic duo of 1989 NBA champion and 18-year veteran Rick Mahorn and 1982 all-rookie first-teamer and two-time NBA All-Star Jeff Ruland. How are you this evening, gentlemen?
Pleasure.
Great to
Great. Jeff is, I don't even know why I should have been one of them damn All-Stars. He stole it from me.
He stole it from you. What do you say about that, Jeff?
He stole it from me. It's just because I was black.
The white-black things. It boils down to the white-black thing.
They only had Larry Bird.
Brothers on the team.
They only had Larry Bird and him.
they had Frankenstein. They had McHale.
Yeah, that did.
Oh, yeah. No, McHale ain't whitey black.
Our episodes will begin with a quick discussion on today's NBA. We'll cover the latest news and hear some of Rick's and Jeff's opinions. And then I'll turn back the clock as we reminisce about their lives in basketball. Today, we'll discuss Jeff's memories of the, speaking of All-Star Games, the 1984 All-Star Game, and hear about Rick's 1985 arrival to the Motor City of Detroit, and finish with a few quick listener-submitted questions and comments. Just quickly, guys, as we record this, it's the evening of March the 2nd in the USA. Four games are on the schedule tonight. Since we last spoke, of course, as happens in today's NBA, lots of things have transpired, but every team has played at least 61 games, and the regular season is almost three-quarters complete. The recently acquired Kevin Durant played his first game with Phoenix yesterday, a comfortable win over the Charlotte Hornets. He had 23 points, and Devin Booker had 37. So clearly, they've got a big scoring punch as they head into the postseason. What's your opinion of Durant and Phoenix's chance of competing for the Western Conference title and maybe beyond?
Jeffrey, you go first. I'm gonna let you go first because you're pretty good at analyzing bullshit.
Well, for them, obviously, number one factor's got to be can Durant and Chris Paul stay healthy. For me, you know, can they stay healthy through this rest of the season and then the run in the playoff? They've got enough, obviously, offensively, defensively. I don't know.
Rick's
seen him more than I have, but that's
Jeff. It's only 20 games left or whatever. And you look at it, the fact of the matter, he's got rest now. He's out there in the sunshine of Phoenix and enjoying that weather. Hey, man, he ain't in Brooklyn no more. The pressure's on him to win a championship.
I understand that fully, but just like everybody else, he's had a great year, but he just missed 30 fucking games. I mean,
but Stetson, listen, this is the new NBA. You have to adjust.
I just more with him at the last couple of years. It wasn't about whether he was coming back; it was whether he's going to come back at the level.
Who would come back? And you're losing in Brooklyn. You're playing with Kyrie. You're playing with Harden. Everybody's waiting for you to win. There was a lot of pressure. Here, he's going. Well, can I finish?
Go ahead, motherfucker.
You motherfucker. When I heard about this trade, when, you know, that domino just like went boom, I said, wow, this is a great trade because in today's NBA, it's more offensive oriented. You got to have firepower. He can hit you with a 50 piece, but then you got Devin Booker that can hit you with another 50 piece.
I agree.
These two. You talk about defense, but the big thing is you got to put the ball in the hoop. They got Aiden, a center, to me, is a walking double-double. Now you got to worry about Chris, you know, you got to force Chris Paul into being a scorer, but he's a distributor. These are the things that you look at. Can they go deep? Can they make a deep run? looking at their bench.
Everything you're saying, so you're spot on, but I'm still saying when it comes down to it, especially maybe not the fucking first round, but after every round there, I don't know if they're capable. Are they a good enough defensive team? That's what I'm going to watch the last 20 games.
Okay, so
the guy is a freak in nature, but he's 34 years old. He's had injuries up to Wahoo. I'd just like to see if he can stay healthy. That's all.
Listen, when you have to play half the season, you can get your full salary. What the heck? He's healthy.
Now, no, God bless him. I'm Missouri, baby. Show me. That's all I'm saying.
To me, when you look at it, his health, his scoring, he's going to be able to and be effective. And this is when, and I understand, I'm talking if all pieces are healthy. I'm not talking about, if this person gets hurt, that person is hurt. It to me is if everybody's whole, that Western Conference is a gauntlet. But I could tell you right now, Denver is the team that nobody's thinking about, nobody's listening to. But, you had Michael Porter Jr. was hurt. Now he's healthy. I mean, it's all about health. And when you look at it, can they make it? I mean, in that Western
Conference. I got to tell you something, and I love Jokic. I know Mike Malone, obviously, from his dad and everything else. But with Porter, funny you said that. I watched them the other night, and I just noticed, like, little things. He don't go for loose balls. He don't play no friggin' defense.
Wait, Ben, hold on. You can't characterize he's not going for loose balls. Hey, I wouldn't go for loose balls if I was hurt.
They didn't make much effort on the defense end is what I'm saying.
It's the fear factor, but you got Aaron Gordon. And Aaron Gordon has been playing well. Him and Joker has a
bond. Oh, yeah. I love
then
Gordon.
Then you got
Murray.
You have KCP. You got Bruce Brown. Listen, when I look at the Western Conference, it's a gauntlet. But when I look at the NBA as a whole, it's everything is all on the same parallel. It ain't really like it's a few teams now that don't have great records. But then it's some teams that you assumed at the beginning what direction they were going, and people always get the assumption, oh, we're going to tank. We're going to restore. We're looking. Houston's still in the same lane. Pistons a little bit still in the same lane, but trying to get better. The things that you look at, Charlotte, San Antonio. But then when you look at Utah, unloading everybody, Minnesota, everybody's in that little group of either a game or two games out. The Lakers with their trade, I just think everything is still on par, because when the playoffs start, it's 0-0, baby.
Just in terms of the Eastern Conference, guys, Milwaukee have reeled off 16 straight wins, and they're now sitting atop the East. I think they're a half game ahead of the Celtics as we record this. How do you see the East, shaping up as the regular season comes to an end? Jeffrey, would you like to have a go at that one?
Because he won't let me talk. He'll go over mine.
Go ahead, man. Go.
I'm giving you the floor.
I don't want the floor.
who do you think the contenders might be? Obviously, Milwaukee and Boston are probably heading towards the Eastern Conference Finals, you'd imagine, unless one of the other teams can maybe cause an upset. But where do you sort of see it going?
Me, obviously, Milwaukee's on a roll, and if they can, finish off the season, they're hard to bet against. But I love Boston, but the Sixers had me going for a little while. They were Harden playing some great ball, and Embiid. They've lost a couple of late. I don't know. I don't see anybody beating those two guys, but Rick's seen more of it than I have. Miami keeps going up and down, and I don't know. They've got enough in the tank to be contenders.
Is that it, Jeff?
That's it, Rick.
All right, my turn.
Yep.
All right. You know what? Boston is pretty good because they have a bench. And basing this all on teams' health, the Milwaukee and Boston, those are the two teams that made it to the Eastern Conference last year. Those two teams improved by acquiring people. Derek White is a perfect example for Boston, and also Malcolm Brogdon. You got a guy, Malcolm Brogdon, rookie of the year, but coming off the bench and being the guy just in case Smart's not having a good game, just in case Jaylen Brown's not having a good game. I mean, they're a team that have multiple pieces that can play together. When I look at the Milwaukee Bucks, they have the same thing. You know, when they get Chris Middleton back into a groove, because he's dealing with it, recovering from an injury, to see he's still playing. But to go off 15 straight, that's remarkable. As they in Giannis, they'll say he's not going to play, and he's playing. But when I look at a team that can do like the fly in the ointment, I'm looking at the New York Knicks. Mm-hmm. And the reason why, they're gritty. And Jalen Brunson, oh my gosh, what an improvement for a person that can be coached by Tom Thibodeau, where, you know, I go, man, this young man, player of the year, NC2A champion, leads Dallas, and look where Dallas is right now. This guy, oh my gosh, he plays both ends of the court, but he also can score at that position, but play defense on the other end. So I look at the Knicks as they move forward. They may not have the bench strength, but that's a team that could be that fly in the ointment. Also, you got the Cleveland Cavaliers, and having Donovan Mitchell and having this guard play that they have, they could be problems too, because then you got Mobley and you got Afro, you got and you also I think they're missing, to me, that small forward that can bring them to that next level. But when in Miami rules, I ain't even thinking about Miami. Unless everybody get hurt, Miami's not giving me any kind of shaking, because they don't have enough height. Yeah. But when you talk about Philadelphia is one of those teams. They're an enigma, because if Joel Embiid decides to just say, fuck it, it's my team, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to win the game. But I don't think you're going to win too many games with and I love P.J. Tucker, but he got to score. And it's about scoring, and you're worrying about Harden. I love the way he changed his game, where he's a walking triple-double and got to shoot the ball every time. But they're going to need him going on in the playoffs.
Yeah, those three teams you're talking about, Philadelphia, Cleveland, and New York, are third, fourth, and fifth, respectively, in the East standings at the moment. So they're all pushing for playoff positioning there. And also, it would be great just to see the Knicks in the playoffs. And I'm sure the New York faithful fans will get behind them as well. It would be just good to see them actually get to the postseason.
New York fans are thick. Go New York. I can't with them. Every time. They ain't been to the mountaintop since 73. I was a Knicks fan when I was growing up. And look, Willis Reed is still my hero. And I sit back sometimes and hear those Knicks fans, and then when they went to the playoffs that year when Randall ended up getting paid, all of a sudden it's like, oh, we had New York. Every time I just, don't get me started.
I'll hit you with a New York nickname, Kevin Bannister.
Kenny Bannister.
The animal. I want to give love to Louis Orr. You know, he's no longer amongst us. He's with the basketball gods. But when you look at the Knicks, you go, okay, well, you know, you're waiting to see, you know, how does this team going to reflect? But they're gritty. And right now they're playing good basketball as well. They're not getting the accolades and the things that you think they should get. But, hey, they got to earn it.
And definitely rest in peace to Louis Orr. I have heard nothing but great things since his passing about what a great guy he was on and off the court, and the contributions he made to many younger players and, communities. It's great to hear. Now, Rick, just quickly on your Detroit Pistons. As we record this, the Pistons are 15-48. I went over their schedule last night, and 8 losses were by 4 or fewer points. And then there was a 9th loss, which was that overtime heartbreaker against the Clippers just after Christmas. You said that they're a young, developing team. And what do you think are your hopes for the squad in the final weeks of the season, taking into account, I guess, the race for Victor Wembanyama?
Well, I mean, the rights, that's just a luck of the draw. I don't get into that. Mm-hmm. I think the way that they're playing last night was a game that I watched. And you got a young guy, Jaden Ivey, calls a timeout. And you didn't have any timeouts. So, you know, these are learning moments right now. You know, these are things that you say, okay, what we could do if we put 48 minutes together. And you have guys like Bogdanović, who's a very good scorer, and no Kay Cunningham, and no, you know, you're missing so many pieces where the injuries and my dog, I let the dogs out. So, and so the fact of the matter is that they are, you know, they're a team that's moving in the right direction. I don't look at the record. I look at how they go out there and perform, and they're competing. It's not like they're just sitting up there giving up 160 points.
That's right. They are definitely competing. That's why I thought I'd just draw that parallel with the number of games that have been so close. And I guess with time, those sort of games, they'll end up hopefully getting some more W's than losses. But yeah, interesting to see how they go heading into the end of this regular season. So just quickly to round out the current day NBA, the Nuggets are atop the Western Conference clearly at the moment. They're 44-19. In the East, the league's hottest team, the Milwaukee Bucks, 45-17. And as I said, they're just ahead of the Celtics. Our league leaders through the 2nd of March, we've got Luka Doncic, who's on 33.2 points per game at the moment. We've got Domantas Sabonis from Sacramento, who's averaging over 12 rebounds a game. And James Harden, who we mentioned earlier from Philadelphia, is averaging almost 11 assists per game. Is there anything that either of you would like to mention further about the current NBA season before we dive into a bit of history?
I'm good. I think I gave you enough pointers. I look at, you know, you're looking at league leaders. Yeah, I mean, it's all good. But if it don't bring you a championship, it don't, that's an individual reward for me. But the thing is, you see Sabonis is not the seven-footer that everybody's looking at. He's just being real gritty. And Sacramento is scoring so many damn points. So you go like, well, damn. But they'll make the playoffs this year. Will they make some noise? They could, because they got De'Aaron Fox. Look, they just played a game, the second highest scoring game the other day, behind the Pistons and Denver Nuggets, and it was a double overtime. Man, I think that record's going to be broke too, because you have one guy got 45 and the other one got 47 or whatever. That was a lot of damn scoring. So I look at all these records are made to be broken. Three-pointers. Look, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's record is broken by LeBron James. Jabbar ain't never shoot no threes. Mm-hmm. Shit. But right. It's the fact that, you know, hey, this is what the new NBA is about. I'm excited for it. Do I get really excited? I like to see something different, you know, where it starts inside out instead of outside in.
Mm. Jeff, anything you'd like to add about the current season before we go into a bit of NBA history?
I'd like to ask my brother here what's his thoughts about J.J. Redick's comment.
Oh, yeah, what great question.
Oh, when they played with milkmen and guys that was working on the line and stuff like that?
No, they're saying that watching Curry come off a screen, how physical it is compared to when we played.
Well, that's why J.J. Redick is on there on TV, because people want to hear nonsense. I mean, when you look at it sometimes, I'm like, okay, J.J. Redick used to go off picks, but yet Van Gundy didn't even like you. So, you know, what am I missing?
I was just curious on that comment. I thought it was, you can't compare errors, but at least watch some goddamn tape before you make a stupid-ass comment like that.
But you want to know something?
For a clip, I guess Michael Cooper was.
I like to see him get a score against Coop. Because Michael Cooper
said he wouldn't, he'd take his lunch money.
He took more than his lunch money. I'd love for him to come off a pick. My eyes got big.
How about if he just passed to the corner and came down the lane?
Oh, please, they ain't coming down. Rules, did you read that article on Reggie Miller talking about he's like, he was scared of me? And I'm sitting there going like, I just ain't take, we ain't never take that shit coming in the lane. But now it's you know, with the new calls and stuff like that, the take fouls, it takes away from the game. And I know we're going to talk about the All-Star game and the state of that. I mean, it's a show. It's called All-Star for a reason.
Do you think there needs to be any drastic changes at all, Jeff, to the All-Star format, or are you just happy to let them play and just make it a one-off exhibition each year like that?
I don't know what the damn answer is. All I know is I watched that thing for about 35 seconds and I turned that shit off.
Damn, you can't get those 35 seconds back.
No,
Rules.
Can't get that shit back. And I was like, oh, that's ridiculous. I mean, it's one thing to be on a fast break, but when no one's 30 feet around you, it's Yeah, I don't know what.
Hey, listen, Jeff. They don't want to get hurt.
I agree with it. I don't know what the answer is, though, Hon.
It's no answer. It's no answer. You look at the games that people play in the summer.
Well, it's got to be. People aren't going to watch that shit, man.
Hey, people pay top dollar to go see that. They want to see their hero. Come on.
Opposite. That's for me.
It used to mean something.
Yeah.
These young men making $40, $30 million. What does it mean that they're going to play an all-star game?
Yeah, I hear you.
It's a bonus. And there, you got a bonus when you made it.
You want to go there?
No, I don't want to go there.
No, I was going to say that the one game I played and we won and we got 2,000 instead of 1,000.
Oh, but here's the thing. Look what they get now. Generational wealth.
Yes,
I'm not mad at them. Maybe even before you when they had an all-star game, before when John Havlicek and them played, they got $50.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, but how do you change that?
I don't know if you can have it. You're talking about low management. You know, my shit ended when I was 28 because I played hurt. I'm all for prolonging everybody's career, but I also understand taking money.
Listen, you need life.
Top dollar to come to a game and dude sit out. So I don't know.
Here's that line with the fans. And they pay top dollar. And this is what I'm saying. You're talking about an all-star game. They pay top dollar to go to the all-star. They want to see their heroes. Fans want to see their heroes, people who they buy their jerseys, people that they want to emulate. They want to see them. But unfortunately, now it's been kind of like, you know, Greg Popovich introduced it. My thing is, if you're hurt, maybe you should have an autograph session. Why you're hurt? What do you ain't playing?
Yeah, I agree.
Sit your ass there, sign autographs for 2 hours because the people want to see you. They want to see you play. Bring their ass with them.
Grab an ice pack and sit on the chair.
Sit your ass out there. That now there's a solution for you if we're trying to stop the management
dunk contest. We're good this year. But the other shit was like a, you know, N1 mixtape shit.
Yeah, but it's entertainment.
Well, I'm just telling you, the ratings, if you looked at the ratings don't coincide. You know, everybody's turning that shit off.
If they're looking at ratings, that comes with the ABC. They pay for it. This is what you get, the next man up.
I see both sides of the coin. I don't know what the answer is. That's all.
It will never be. It's entertainment.
I think that's what we have to realize. Yeah, it's entertainment.
Well, then let's turn it up a notch and let's put like sawing people in half and some magic ass and shit like that.
Basically, you're doing it anyway. Look at the halftime show. Coming
close to that, I have you and me rap with Shaq or something.
No, that's it. I can hear me rapping. I can't hear you rapping. Drop a bar. I
go R&B.
Yeah, drop a bar right now.
What have you got for us, Jeff?
Got no shot at the encore.
You could just say hip hop, hippity hop, you don't stop.
Rick, I do like that idea of perhaps at least if someone's on the injured list, they do some autograph signing or something.
This is what the NBA sells that, you know, the autographs, the panini breads, the things like that, the cards. I mean, it's a market. So if you look at it, okay, if it's load management and we're playing for Kevin Durant, and they people buy top dollar. Well, then let's get them like they do concerts. Here's $50 to take a picture.
And you have an autograph session with Kiss. Yeah,
that's. I mean, maybe that. Listen, maybe I hit something there.
Yeah, there I go. Like it.
Can I get my money then?
Yeah, let me just say.
Before we go further, though, March 14th. Down in Washington, D.C., when the Pistons in town, we're going to be selling some Beef Brothers t-shirts, Adam, so we need to get that out there.
Sure they know that come meet Jeff Rulin and Rick Mahorn, the Beef Brothers, the originals, and bring your money. We're going to be there. We still have fans out there. that we love dearly.
March 14th, down in D.C. at the Kristen game, Beef Brothers will be selling some limited number of Beef Brother t-shirts.
I'd love to see that.
Mailing you some also, Adam.
Oh.
The hot commodity there in Australia, so you might want to get a new security system put up there.
I might need to. Thank you.
Breaking in, trying to get those son of a bitches.
I just love that the fans are still appreciative of what Jeff and I achieved with the Bullets, and now the Wizards or whatever they want to call it, but they still keep the Bullets in their heart. No pun intended, with the Bullets in the heart.
Of course.
The thing is, they're still fans that really appreciated what we did, and I'm looking forward to meeting them because every time I'm down there, not only the fans, but they still have some of the same workers that we were working out in Landover that I'll walk in. It's like, Ricky, how you doing? I'm sitting there going like, oh, I'm home. You know, it's home. We were appreciated.
Just for context here, in June of 1985, the Bullets traded you along with Mike Gibson to the Pistons in exchange for Dan Ranfield. You quickly became a key piece of that Detroit title contender. And then within 4 years, you were an NBA champion. How did you learn of the trade, and how was that transition from Washington to Detroit?
Well, I tell you right now, the guy that's on this podcast with me called me first, and he was so upset. And the fact of the matter, I didn't even know. I was sleeping. He called me. I was at my mother's house. I got a private line up in my room, and he called me. He said, man, I'm sick. I said, what you sick for? Man, they just traded you. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, really? How you know before I don't even know? They don't even call me. And Jeff was, he was really hurt. And I was hurt because Jeff and I built this bond, which is still with us today. It'll never be broken no matter where we are. Our families are connected. We both had the same type of dogs, vehicles. It was like looking at my opposite in a white form and him looking at me in a black form.
It was even more than that, Horn. Just going from the basketball side, and there's no slight, you know, Round was a great player, but not at that point when he got traded. You look back, I didn't know our defensive rating between the two of us. We were the top rebounding duo for 3 or 4 fucking years, and it just made no sense if they're going to trade somebody.
That was Bob Ferry. Yeah, I'm stating names, shoot. And bless his soul, he's not, you know, but that was Bob Ferry because Jeff and I remember we were talking about, you know, contracts, you know, and we would go, okay, did you get yours? And he was like, yeah, I got mine. And mine, is, I was a non-guaranteed player. I had to make the team to my second year and in the starting position. So I just wanted it guaranteed. My agent, Al Walden, went to Bob. Bob didn't want to do nothing. Bob just wanted to stay status quo. And so my agent went to Abe Poland, and Mr. Poland said yes and guaranteed me. And then Jeff made the All-Star, all this stuff, and blah, you know, moving forward. Next thing you know, Jeff was like, I got a new contract. And Jeff was like, how much you get? I said, I got a little more than you. He didn't believe me, but then he called me a motherfucker when he found out because he went
Here was the thing. It didn't make any sense because they had always told me that I could renegotiate every year. So why would they tell me that and then not do that for you? But they did. They gave me a new contract that same year, but then they were supposed to give me another one. And Poland gave me a check for $80,000. And I remember it to this day. I walked in and he gave it to me and I handed it right back to him and I walked out. And I'm like, why the fuck did I do that? And then the following year, they gave me another contract. It was always, they made you
always
seem like,
BS.
Like you were fucking begging and shit. It was just,
yeah,
it was fucked up.
So when I got traded, it hurt because I bought a house. Jeff bought a house. We interacted a lot. We're still family. It got to the point, hey, our relationship never waned. I got to Detroit, and next thing you know, I'm picking him up from the hotel. We're, you know, going to get something to eat.
And my knee blew out, and then I used to fly up and hang out with Horn, you know, come up and see him once or twice.
Yeah, and when we first played against each other, we're fighting like cats and dogs on it because it was like practice to us. The referee's looking at us like we're trying to kill each other, but it was the fact that it was the competition. We never waned from our jobs for 48 minutes because I wanted to beat him and I can have bragging rights, or he wanted to beat me and so he can have bragging rights. So that's where you got to draw the line. When you get on the court, we're not friends.
Nope.
Different to today's NBA.
I don't know if it's different. I just think,
it's, you
know,
the AAU thing. I played AAU, but there was only freaking 8 or 9 teams back then. Now you grow up, you're playing together, and it's
and different. Everybody wants to play with each other. That's what separates Giannis and the Joker, because their friends are from their countries. Mm-hmm. And that's why when Giannis is on that court, he's trying to kill you. He got bad intentions for you. And he ain't trying to be a friend. The same way with Kobe. Kobe was like, I ain't got no friends. For 48 minutes, I'm going to kill you. Mm-hmm. Michael Jordan, when I was in Philly with Charles Barkley and playing against the Pistons, we're in the playoffs. And I said, okay, we're playing Chicago. I said, Charles, you got to knock Michael on his ass.
Now, Mike used to make believe they were friends and shit. Charles,
yeah. Mike, that's my friend. I'm sitting there going, like, your friend? I said, the Pistons, most of them are
that
my friend.
Beating your ass and laughing behind your back.
Now they ain't friends no more. It's 10 years. So, you know, the same with Magic and Isaiah.
It's called karma.
And it's called bullshit, the art of bullshit.
It's called karma. That's why they ain't friends no more.
Well, two things. There's a great photo of you, Rick. Now you mentioned Chicago. When you were playing with the 76ers, a shot from under the basket, and you're wrapping your arms around Jordan, hitting him very hard during one of the playoff games, I'd say. Do you know the one I'm referring to?
The one where we're in Chicago. I don't give a shit. I hit everybody that way. I ain't discriminating.
Equal opportunity fucker-upper.
Yeah. Equal opportunity fucker-upper. I like that one.
That's a good description.
I'll tell you one thing about Michael, though. You could beat that motherfucker up. He very rarely complained about this shit.
Nope. He didn't complain. Some fierce competition. These guys now, when they jump up in the air, it's bad intentions because they get up. And look, the guy that won, McClure, that won the dunk contest?
Yeah, Mac McClung.
I'm sitting there going like, this mother, I said, oh, shit.
Hey, you know what? He has worse hairstyle than you do, Adam. That motherfucker.
Ouch.
This should look like Leave It to Beaver.
Listen, then he goes to the G League All-Star Game, and he's sitting there like a celeb. I ain't mad at him. That was a good dunk contest.
I agree.
Interesting little wrinkle there, how Jeff was the one that called you about your trade from Washington. That was fascinating to hear. Thank you both for sharing.
And after he called me, I get a call from Isaiah Thomas to welcome me.
Nice.
And the fact of the matter, I never spoke to him on the phone or never had any. I said, Zeke? He called me on my private number in my house. And I was like, oh, okay. That's all good. I didn't like Detroit my first year. I hated this place.
Really?
But, oh, I hated it with a passion.
Worked out well.
It was ugly days. You wake up, it's gray. Mm-hmm. It's cold. It's just nasty. But then I realized that this is a place that has a lot of growth. And next thing you know, we're champions. And I'm still here.
Exactly. Look forward to delving more into both your respective histories. And I love the Hampton Institute jerseys you've got in the background there, Rick, too. We'll have to talk about your recent honor from Hampton Institute as well in another episode. You were an All-Star, Jeff, in 1984 and 1985, and you could also sense the players' anticipation and excitement during those pre-game introductions. None more so, perhaps, than your All-Star game debut at Denver's McNichols Arena. You were just itching to get on the court. How did it feel for you to hear your name as you entered the court as one of the top 24 players in the world?
A lot better than top 24, but you grow up and you have dreams and always had confidence in myself. Matter of fact, I was pissed off because I thought I should have made it the year before. But then this game was in fucking Denver. I hated playing in the Denver because of the altitude. And then I was also concerned. Every game I suit up in the Eastern Conference, it's Moses Malone, it's Robert Parrish. I was hoping to play 15 or 20 minutes and have a shot at the MVP. And, you know, I think I turned the game around, but KC only played me 12 minutes. Every time we played Boston from then on in, I tried to take it out on him.
Do you remember the feeling in the locker room ahead of the game?
I just remember my daughter was like a week old or two, and I wanted to get the fuck home as much as I wanted to play in the game. I sprinted out of the locker room, yeah.
Okay, so you hit the road pretty quick.
Well, here's the true story. You want to hear this?
Please.
So when you make the All-Star team, they give you four tickets. You can fly two people in from anywhere in the country first class.
Oh.
So my mom wasn't going because she was helping my wife with my daughter. So I brought my two buddies from high school in for the whole weekend. They stayed with me in the room. They were drinking and going to the events. And I gave them the four tickets. And I said, listen, go to the game, sell the two extra tickets, and keep the money. And when I was leaving, I said, but don't. I said, listen, you mother. I said, don't get fucking greedy. So game plays, I run home, you know, I talk to them maybe a week later. They go, oh, thanks for everything. I said, yeah, how'd you do with the tickets? They go, well, we got offered like $500 a piece, and then we thought we could get a little more. And then these two guys came up, and they showed us the badges. They were cops, and they take all our tickets. And bottom line is we went into the game, and the two tickets they took, they were sitting there, and they watched the game with us.
Oh, that's a classic. Thanks for sharing that. We'll just quickly finish off with a few listener questions and comments.
Yes, please. Before we start, let's get some more questions from now on, more subscribers, and some more fucking good questions, please. Let's go. Anything you want to talk about, within reason.
The floor is theirs. So we've got just over 300 subscribers at the moment on the channel, which is good. It's slowly building, but we do need to increase those numbers.
We got 20,000 hits on the Boston game. That's crazy.
Definitely check out Jeff and Rick's YouTube channel, Beef Brothers, to see some of the great games.
Watch your fucking game and learn about 80s basketball, you nitwit.
This question comes from Marlon J via the Beef Brothers YouTube channel, and he asks, who annoyed you more, Paul McKeskey or Bill Laimbeer? I probably know the answer.
Me and Mo go way back. We play golf together, have beers. Mo is an ugly looking dude, but Bill is the most annoying prick motherfucker. I'd beat his ass now just if I saw him in the hallway right now. That's Rick's boy. Fuck that motherfucker. I would have led the league in scoring if I played against his fat ass every night. Bill, I love you, but you were a prick. Sorry.
That's fantastic. My jaw is hurting for smiling so much. I love Big Mo. I got to meet him in Las Vegas in 2020, just after the All-Star weekend in Chicago. My wife and I were traveling across the states on our way back to California.
Vegas, that's him.
I got to meet him and his wife, Linda, so I've got a big soft spot for Big Mo. Love Paul. I'm glad to see that Laimbeer copped it.
Bill has a special place in my heart, yeah.
And the other question today, you did reply to this gentleman on YouTube, but for the benefit of our listener, Dean Oliver G, in relation to Jeff Malone's miracle game winner in 1984 versus Laimbeer and Detroit, he says, do you remember the feeling as Malone heaved the shot?
Yeah, of course. It was a game we had no business winning. We won it. Darren made a shit pass, and Jeff made a great fucking play on it. And if he would have passed the ball early in the game, we wouldn't have needed it for all that bullshit.
It was a fantastic finish, and that game is actually up on your YouTube channel, so I definitely encourage people listening, check it out. The second part of that question from Dean was Darren Day the least bit scolded by Coach Hsu or assistant Bernie Bickerstaff for nearly blowing that pass that Jeff Malone saved? Do you recall if there's any repercussions to that?
I recall that might be one of the stupidest fucking questions I've ever. If we just fucking won a game, we had no business winning. Who gave a fuck about bad the pass? We won the fucking game. Come on.
I love the honesty, Jeff. I love it. So there you go. Who was that asked by? Dean, thank you for the question. That's your honest answer from Jeff.
Thank you, Dean. The second one was a little shady, but what are you going to do?
And if you do make comments on the YouTube channel for Beef Brothers, Jeff, he'll add a reply back if he sees the questions.
Once in a while, I get bored and I'm on the toilet. I gotta go on there.
Hopefully the questions don't match the space where you're sitting.
That's a whole other issue. But
exactly. Thank you both for joining me again today. It's been great chatting with you, and I look forward to doing another episode in not too distant future.
All right. Thanks,
best, Adam. Baby.
Hey, Rules, number love. Have a nice day.
Love you too. He shouldn't die.
Thank you, guys. See ya.
Thanks, Adam. Bye.